night.
Or you know what? Yeah, probably it's better like this, no? In my pocket? Theoretically. Okay. Yeah, I mean, most of the slides are white backgrounds, so maybe it's better for you just dim the lights or put behind you. Okay, nobody sleeps though. Okay. Okay, thank you for coming. The topic of today's talk is diet and cancer, a topic of interest to many people, mostly of interest to the patients, actually. I mean, though, my experience has been, whether in hematology or oncology, and probably dealing with heart disease or hypertension also, the patients often want to know, well, what can I eat? You know, you can go through an entire discussion about you have stage 4 disease and the chemo, the risks and the benefits, and that's fine. In the end, they still want to know what you can eat. So, and it's not something that is taught very often. And that's for patients who are already diagnosed with cancer. But the most of the topic of today's talk will be as prevention, but I am going to touch upon diet in patients who already have cancer as a, you would call it either secondary prevention or those who are actually getting chemotherapy and the interaction some of the dietary supplements may have or diet may have with that. So, as far as prevention, I'm going to touch upon a few areas, dietary fat, red meat, fruits and vegetables, dairy, fiber, glycemic load, and omega-3 fatty acids. All of these have had some recommendation with regard to cancer. Vitamins and micronutrients also, although not necessarily part of the diet, more considered a supplement of interest also to a lot of people. Alcohol consumption, and then nutritional support for patients who already have cancer as well. So before we start, I just want to touch upon the American Society, American Cancer Society guidelines, and this is just one of many guidelines, but what is it that they recommend? So this is almost a summary slide in the beginning of the talk. We'll go through the data as to how they got to this, and I'll show it again at the end. So they recommend maintaining a healthy weight, and there's actually good level one evidence for weight and how that can affect outcomes in patients who already have cancer and also in preventing cancer. Eating 5 more servings of vegetables and fruits, choosing whole grains, and limiting consumption of processed and red meats. And that last one has gotten a lot of attention, I think, and it's something that is has a broader, knowledge or understanding of patients out there. And then alcoholic beverages, one drink per day allowed if you're a woman, too, if you're a man. I'm not sure if that, if you binge on the weekend, if that's averaged out or not, but that's actually something that's been looked at prospectively as well. So what's the evidence? So when I was first asked to do this talk, or I volunteered this talk last year, I said, well, let me see, I'm an evidence-based guy, and let me see what I can find out there. That'll be easy just to review, right? Well, looking in PubMed, that was as of last summer, 27,000 plus publications, 961 randomized trials, 128 meta-analysis, and I showed you one guideline. There's actually 32 practice guidelines out there published from different societies, Gastroenterologic Society and other societies as well. The fava beans, I just put that because my last talk was to the Egyptian American Medical Society, if you can ignore that. We have the data juxtaposed to marketing, right? There's a lot of marketing out there, and it's been for many years. And so this was what people thought, I guess, when our grandparents were, or our parents were growing up, that lard made you happy. And it's actually not false advertising. I'm sure it did make them happy, but it turns out that it also may have increased their cancer risk, maybe. Maybe. We'll look at that. So what is it about dietary fat? What have they concluded? So there's actually no clear link between fat in colon or breast cancer. And by the way, a lot of the topics I will talk about, the talk I'll talk about, will deal with the big four, right? Colon, prostate, lung, and breast cancer, because those are the ones that represent 50% of all cancers in this country and other countries. So it's easier to get data on that because you need outcomes, you need cases to compare to, and as opposed to a less common cancer or sarcoma or something like that, you're just not going to have enough events to have an outcome that you can say is positive. So, and a lot of the data, it comes from the same few trials. So one of them was the Women's Health Initiative. I'm sure you've heard about this. This was 48,000 women in which they prospectively looked at a program to reduce dietary fat, and the goal was to reduce the dietary fat calories consumed from 10.7% to 8% at year six. Well, that was what was achieved. And then there was a control group that they didn't have to change anything. And there was no difference in that one between the incidence of colon cancer. There was a trend towards a decrease in breast cancer, but not statistically significant. Prostate cancer, alpha-linolenic acid, and low linoleic acid increased risk. Those are things that are found in red meat and in dairy. And the mechanism of association may be that there's a lower testosterone level for that. The physician's health study was the main objective was not to look at diet in that, although that was prospectively collected, but the main outcome was looking at the effect of aspirin in beta-carotene versus placebo. So this was 22,000 U.S. male physicians between the ages of 40 and 84. This was in 1982, without a history of cancer or coronary artery disease. They were able to get 14,000 plasma samples that were frozen and then later looked at for trans fatty acid. So trans fatty acid, as you all know, since 2010, that's something that has to be reported for anything that has any kind of nutritional claim or in restaurants as well now. So you need to know how much trans fatty acid is there. So they looked at the 120 men who developed prostate cancer. And this is from a publication. So we divided into quintiles, right? So they took the diet and they divided into five quintiles and they compared the highest to the lowest quintiles. And they found actually that for patients who had a BMI, pointer doesn't work too well with the screen, but the patients who had a BMI greater than or equal to 25, which was 84 cases, compared to the lower quintile, that there was a significant increased risk of developing prostate cancer. Interestingly, though, this slide shows that while there is an increased risk for patients in the placebo group, the aspirin group actually, I guess it corrected for it, that there was no increase. There was a trend. The significance is 0.54, so that's not significant. So they call that a trend. I'm not sure what the confidence interval was. So being overweight is bad when you have a high trans fatty diet, but you may be able to correct it, I guess, with aspirin. Red meat, so this is one of the things that has been shown to increase the incidence of cancer. It's supposedly is when you cook it at high temperatures, the heme content, animal fat, and carcinogens are increased. Red meat, defined in many studies, is beef, pork, veal, lamb. What's not here is processed meat also, so the cold cut, the turkey sandwiches, that I used to have a lot at lunch is increased to, or is included in that. So a prospective study of 47,000 male health professionals, 205 cases. So you see the numbers are still small, right? So you have to have, 47,000 for 205 cases. So overall, your absolute risk is still low. However, with those, when they looked at the quintiles of the highest versus the lowest, they found that there was a 3.5 times increased risk. The relative risk was 3.57 of the highest quintile versus the lowest quintile. And how did they define that? So the highest quintile was if you had red meat 5 times a week. The lowest quintile was 1 time a month. The ones in between, not necessarily a difference. Another another study, prospective study in women, 88,150 cases of colon cancer at 6 years of follow-up. After adjustment for energy intake, animal fat was associated with increased risk of colon cancer. The relative risk was 2.49, and as I mentioned before, it's processed meats and liver, whereas fish and chicken without the skin specified, so skinless chicken, had an inverse risk, so that that decreased the incidence of colon cancer. Surprisingly, fiber from fruits, when corrected for other factors, did not have any statistically significant impact on colon cancer. So, you know, we want to believe that fruits and vegetables or fruits were going to help, but so far, no data yet. Another study, a European prospective study, this is actually the largest one, 500,000 people almost in this one, 1,329 cases. Once again, red meat and processed meat increased risk of cancer. So we have now three different large prospective trials that show red meat does increase the risk of colon cancer. So fruits and vegetables, we would think that fruits and vegetables, as I mentioned, would decrease the incidence of cancer. And this was shown by a few retrospective studies looking at soy, flavonoids like in tomatoes, and lycopene, which is in tomatoes, which may decrease the prostate cancer. So this was a series of small studies that all showed a benefit of lycopene and cancer risk for breast, colon, lung, and prostate, right? So the big four. So this led to larger studies afterwards. Soy intake also in 17 of 26 animal studies revealed that soy reduces tumor development. In 19 of 21 human epidemiologic studies, it showed to provide protection against rectal and stomach cancers. So not rectal included in a lot of the colon cancer studies, but stomach cancer, there's not much out there prospectively. However, one of the concerns is that, at least in one animal study, that mammary tumors were fed soy or isoflavonoids increased breast cancer growth. And it's interesting because last decade that was a popular thing to drink soy milk instead of milk from cows or anything animal fat related. But a lot of the soy milk that was produced here was found to have phytoestrogens in them. So for women with breast cancer, especially if she has ER-positive breast cancer, which is 70% of them, the soy milk may actually be opposing what the tamoxifen was supposed to be doing, which is blocking the estrogen receptor. So one study that was published in Cancer Positive Control, and this was actually a prospective study once again, in 79,000 members of a church. So the church embarked on the study of soy milk and looked at prostate cancer cases prospectively, and they found, although it was a very tight confidence interval, again here, 0.1 to 1, it didn't cross 1, but it showed that if you had more than one serving a day of soy milk, that decreases your incidence of prostate cancer as well. Once again, maybe the phytoestrogens that was in the soy milk did it for the men, counteracting the testosterone. So these are the smaller studies, the retrospective studies. So let's go to the prospective studies. In summary, large prospective studies have not found a difference in or benefit from fruits and vegetables. First one is the Nurses' Health Study, which has 70,000 women and 37,000 men in the health professionals follow-up study, found no association. For that one, confidence interval, risk you see is, relative risk was 1.0 with a confidence interval exactly the same, so we can't even say that there's a trend over there. The large EPIC study, which I mentioned before, with 500,000 people, they looked at 285,000 women between the ages of 25 and 70, and there was no association with intake of fruits and vegetables for that one. Interpretations of the various authors for this is that One, it may be too late, that maybe our diet as a child, growing up to an adult, may have had the most impact, and by the time you do these interventions with diet, the whatever exposure may have had its effect. And also the variation between the fruits and vegetables, and just as an example, we have two different tomato varieties, and we have the, you see the chemical structure is different for them, although they're both tomatoes, and will be reported as both tomatoes in the dietary surveys. So what about dairy? So beyond soy milk, just regular dairy, there's a meta-analysis of 21 studies for this. And there was a risk reduction of 0.96, so very small, of ovarian cancer reduction. Four prospective studies were done. Three demonstrated increased risk of ovarian cancer with high intake of dairy foods. And then the Netherlands cohort study, which is the largest of these, after 11 years, showed there was no association between dairy intake and ovarian cancer. So, for a lot of this so far, we have conflicting data. We have larger trials that do not reproduce what some of the smaller retrospective trials have shown. But the only thing so far, just to summarize, is red meat. How about the dairy intake and specifically breast cancer? So for the Nurses Health Study, there's a lot of data on breast cancer, but it is the most common cancer, right? It's 200,000 cases a year. Breast cancer, so there's a lot of studies that can be done with that, as opposed to the next most common, lung cancer, which is 75,000 cases. So for the Nurses Health Study, 88,000 women, they found that there was an inverse association with low-fat diet, calcium, and vitamin D, but only in premenopausal women. So it implies that this is a hormonal effect on these women, or that they're younger women, and that the magnitude of the effect may take longer than in a postmenopausal person. A pooled analysis of eight prospective studies confirmed no association between dairy and breast cancer in postmenopausal women. However, so postmenopausal, no effect, but in premenopausal women, which everyone in this room is premenopausal, dairy intake, a low-fat intake, and calcium and vitamin D intake will help you. You know, when I was at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, there was a study that was actually closed early because they lost their funding. But after 8 years, they did this study, actually, of low-fat diet, right? And so that was before the Atkins diet was the fad. So back then, it was a low-fat diet. And it did show a 5% in primary prevention of breast cancer. You know, unfortunately, they lost their funding, so they had to close. But even having to close early, they did find a benefit. There's a study that I'm going to show a little bit later on with weight and breast cancer. So the people who did have a benefit from that low-fat diet, it was actually those who lost 5% of their body mass index. So it may not be actually the diet, but the end justifying the means. So if you have a lower BMI, then you're going to have a lower incidence of cancer and breast cancer. And then finally, the AARP. So this is another study from the NIH. They found that there's decreased total cancer risk in women, but they couldn't divide it by subsets, but there was not a decrease in men. Decreased cancer in the digestive tract with higher dairy food and calcium intake was noted in both men and women. So in summary, fiber and cancer, no relationship between fiber intake and colorectal cancer, although that's, I would say, unsettled. There was a systematic review of 4,349 patients that they were saying there was no definitive evidence for polyps happening in 2 to 4 years, a very short interval, but we know that polyps after 7 to 10 years, excuse me, will lead to colon cancer. And then a pooled analysis of 13 trials found that dietary fiber intake was inversely associated with risk of colon cancer, but the association was no longer apparent when you accounted for other factors. What were those other factors? the other factors would be genetics being one of them. So this was actually a mouse study showing that it's not just diet. And by the way, the AIN diet stands for the American Institute of Nutrition Diet, which is a high-fat, low-calcium, and vitamin D diet versus the Western diet, the Western diet is the high-fat diet, whereas the American Institute of Nutrition is a high-fiber, low-fat diet. And it showed when they knocked out this allele in mice, when they were missing two alleles, that they had the lowest incidence of survival. When they had one of the two, it was intermediate, and when they had the two alleles, it protected against it. So there are some genetic effects as well as the point of this slide. Glycemic load, this is also very important. What is the glycemic index? It's how rapidly and to what extent blood glucose levels rise. This has been associated with higher insulin-like growth factors, which are shown to promote tumor growth in preclinical studies. And 15 studies, 2.5 million patients estimate that there's a 30% increased risk of colon cancer among diabetics. I was not aware of that before doing this talk, so diabetes does increase your risk of colon cancer, and this may be the reason why. Once again, the NIH-AARP study found no association of 15,000 cancers in women and 33,000 cancers in men with glycemic load. Women's Health study did find that there was an increased risk when they calculated the glycemic index. Canadian trial found no association of colorectal cancer, and the Nurses' Health study found that there was an increased risk for men of colon cancer, but no association for women. So colon cancer, glycemic index, we have some evidence that there is an increased risk. The summaries will get shorter and shorter. So the omega-3 fatty acids is another one. Three trials that reviewed this showed no association to omega-3 fatty acid cancers. 20 cohorts, 7 countries, 11 different cancer types, 700,000 patients showed no association, although individual studies have found an increased risk of cancer with no consistent pattern. Vitamins and nutrients, I think this is important. I get a lot of questions in my office about vitamin D, about calcium supplements. The NIH has luckily come out with a consensus statement saying there's no data either way. I took a table from UpToDate summarizing all the different trials looking at different supplements, including multivitamins, selenium, vitamin C, calcium, and vitamin D as well. Right? This is very popular right now, looking at breast cancer in women, no effect. Folate supplement may actually be worse for patients developing men to develop prostate cancer. So one is, however, interesting, gastric cancer, fewer deaths with selenium, vitamin E, and carotene. Also, so selenium and vitamin E is something that's been looked at in a large prospective trial. So the SELECT trial looked at supplementing selenium and vitamin E. By the way, selenium is also a supplement used for patients who already had lung cancer, resected early stage, giving them selenium. Trial was stopped early because the selenium arm actually had more lung cancer recurrence than the non-selenium arm. So this one was for prostate cancer. They looked at, it was four-armed, placebo being one of them, selenium, vitamin E in two of the arms, and then a combination of the two. The trial, the Data and Safety Monitoring Board looked at the trial, and the NIH, if you go to their website, updated just a few days ago, they said that there was no effect. However, there were some concerning trends. So the Data Safety Monitoring Committee found that selenium and vitamin E did not prevent prostate cancer. Fine. However, there was the concern that in men taking only vitamin E, there were slightly more cases of diabetes than men taking selenium. So no benefit and possibly more diabetes, as we saw in the previous slide, may lead to more colon cancer, although that wasn't the outcome of this study. Vitamin D may reduce colon cancer risk by improving calcium absorption, prostate, and breast, but no effect on breast cancer in three trials. However, one trial, which was interesting, and which led to, I think, a lot of the belief about supplementation now, looking at calcium and vitamin D in 1,179 women over 4 years, showed a decrease in all cancer types. So where was this study done, and why is that important? The study was done in Nebraska. All right, so it was done in Nebraska. cold weather state, and so this led to the author's conclusion that the cold weather or the sunblock and lack of vitamin D from that may be what increases cancer in those people in that climate. So this was the outcome of the study, and it was a relatively short follow-up, and the overall cases were something like 20 versus 14 cases, I think, of breast cancer, and it was less than, maybe that was for all the cancers, but it was a prospective trial. It was placebo-controlled. It was randomized, which is what a lot of these other population-based studies don't have, right? A lot of population studies, you're filling out a survey, it's 48,000 people, and it's very hard to fill out a dietary survey, but this was actually a controlled trial with an intervention and outcome. So based on this one study, it has become very popular to give calcium and vitamin D to decrease risk of all cancers. Now, if you subset the different cancers, it wasn't enough cases to say that any one cancer was decreased. This was all cancers measured in these 1,000 women. How about alcohol? We mentioned before the guidelines from the American Cancer Society. And this came out at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium last year. So folate and alcohol, increased alcohol increases your risk. Decreased folate also increases your risk. May be related, folate deficiency with alcohol. Once again, cut and paste from up to date, but it shows that there is, for the group over here, the risk is increased when the folate is decreased and when the alcohol consumption is increased as well. This just out a month ago, and we talked about this before, that it may not be the actual diet, but the outcome of the diet. So they looked at prospective trials for breast cancer patients. So these are women, early-stage breast cancer. EBC is early-stage breast cancer, had a lumpectomy, mastectomy, and they were looking at chemotherapy options in these patients, right? So they went back and looked at the corrected for the clinical characteristics, the treatment arms. They looked at the clinical outcomes. And then they wanted to subdivide it by the type of breast cancer. So we have three types of cancers now. We have ER positive, so estrogen receptor positive. We have those who are HER2 positive, another biologic marker that's about 15% of the cases. And then what we call triple negative. They don't express estrogen or a HER2-new receptor. So what did they find? And so they looked, these are the three trials, and Dr. Sperano, my mentor, was the author of the 1199 trial. That's the most recent of the trials. And these were the outcomes they were looking at, chemotherapy-wise and endocrinotherapy-wise. Not so interesting for the topic of today's discussion, but they also had BMI data on about 5,500 patients. So they looked at those 5,500 patients, and they divided it up by ER status, so those who are ER positive, ER negative. So you see for the patients who were triple negative or HER2 positive that the BMI did not have an impact. However, for the ER positive patients, those who had a BMI greater than 30 compared to the lower BMI did have a worse overall and disease-free survival in these studies. And this was validated in two other studies. So this was the 1199 Dr. Sperano study, and these were two other studies that found a similar hazard ratio. It was 1.41 for here, 1.45 for the other one. For the ER negative, it had no impact. So high BMI, bad outcome for breast cancer. Interesting, that's only for ER-positive breast cancers, so it may be an estrogenic effect that is causing this. Almost done, a couple more things. Nutritional support. This is, patients always want to know what vitamins can I take while they are getting chemotherapy, or what nutritional supplements can I take, or what can I do. So just two interesting studies. One with ginger. This was the plenary presentation at ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting last year, right? Some plenary. So there's people working on, you know, genomics and all kinds of fancy technologies, and then somebody just does a randomized trial of ginger, right? I love that. It makes the non-scientists like me feel like there's hope that you can get a plenary session one day with this. So what they did is they randomized patients with four arms, three different doses of ginger versus placebo. And these are patients who already had a vomiting or break chemotherapy induced nausea and vomiting from one of their previous chemotherapy cycles. So if they had that, they would then enter into this trial where they were given ginger. And all doses of ginger significantly reduced nausea in these patients, no matter what the dose was. So this is something we can now recommend to our patients, and we do recommend to our patients, and they love that. And some of them like to have ginger tea, ginger candies, and say that's fine. But we know that it at least has to be 500 milligrams worth of ginger in there. How about vitamin E? You got to watch out for these. You can't always recommend vitamins. We have here a study which was published about 11 years ago that actually antioxidants can reduce the efficacy of cisplatin. So we use cisplatin in a lot of cancers right now. It's used in lung cancer, some breast cancers even, head and neck cancer. So we tell them avoid vitamin E. So once again, stuff that's not taught to oncology fellows or to residents for that matter. But you can't uniformly say just take your multivitamin. You have to ask that when you're treating them. So just to summarize, and I'll sort of give a scorecard at the end of all the different cancers because it's very confusing, all the data. But once again, the American Cancer Society recommendations, balanced caloric intake with physical activity, translated, lower BMI does better. Avoid excessive weight gain through the life cycle, achieve and maintain a healthy weight if currently overweight or obese, adopt a physically healthy and active lifestyle with exercise recommendations. Kids got to play more than adults, 60 versus 30 minutes. And then as far as dietary servings, 5 more servings of vegetables and fruits each day, even though the vegetable and fruit data was neither here nor there. Refined grains, and some of this is, once again, that didn't necessarily impact on colon cancer, but still recommended. Limit consumption and process of red meats, that's a definite, right? Multiple studies showing in more than one cancer, male and female, that red meats can increase cancer risk. And then alcohol, we know that for sure, prospectively, breast cancer, that can increase risk. And so allowance is one drink per day. And by the way, this may go against the, I don't know what the cardiologists recommend, how much is too much and how much is not enough. And I didn't touch upon it before, like the calcium supplements, right? One of the journal clubs last year was calcium supplements increasing MI risk. So as usual, oncologists and cardiologists are the opposite end of the spectrum, clinically and also with their diet as well. So what counts as a serving? Because how can we recommend it if we don't know what we're actually recommending? So for fruits, I've listed some of what counts as a serving. Half a cup of fruit juice, one apple, banana, or orange, vegetables. I have a list over there. Half a cup of vegetable juice and one in grains, one slice of bread, and 1 ounce of ready-to-eat cereal, and half a cup of cooked cereal. These are some other things that count as servings: beans and nuts, dairy foods and eggs and meats. And beans and nuts are going to be popular for those who want to avoid all kinds of animal products. So conclusions, inconsistent results, right? A little bit confusing. The observational studies are imprecise, right? Because they're looking over many years, over many people, with confounding risk factors which aren't always corrected in those studies. How can you correct it for 48,000 people? Randomized studies are good, except you need to do it for a long time. You need to adhere to the dietary intervention also. The diet, as I mentioned before, like with the tomatoes, it's tough to control for specifically the same type of vegetable as opposed to a supplement or a vitamin, which is a pill. And even with that, by the way, there was a supplement called PC Spez for prostate cancer years ago that was taken off the market because when they looked at it, there was no control, and there was so much variability in the production of that from one bottle to the next. So even with some of these supplements, you can't correct for how much of whatever active ingredient is in there. And then one consistent finding, though, is that excess calories from any source leads to weight gain and increased risk of multiple cancers. So weight gain is bad, whether that's through a high glycemic index or through dietary fat or whatever it is, you have to decrease your weight. So what's the score for the different cancers? So what do we find with all these different studies? So what decreases your risk for breast cancer? Low-fat diet will may decrease your risk in one of the studies. Low-fat dairy, calcium, vitamin D, only in premenopausal women. And folic acid increase may decrease risk. So it was actually the opposite that was shown, that deficiency of folic acid may increase risk. Things that showed no difference for breast cancer, dietary fat, fruits and vegetables, vitamin D, and calcium in postmenopausal women, and red meat also. And things that increase risk are two or more drinks. For prostate cancer, alpha linoleic acid and low amounts of linoleic acid may increase non-aggressive cancers. Calcium, not too sure about that one, conflicting data. No difference for selenium and vitamin E. There was an increased risk of diabetes, remember, for the SELECT trial. And soy milk may decrease risk. Who knows if that's from the estrogens that were in the soy milk, but that was in that one church study of 78,000 men. How about colon cancer? Colon cancer, fish, both in men and women, decreases your risk. Chicken without the skin in one study with women, the nurses' health study. And calcium and dairy intake for men and women. And then red meat increases risk in men and women for colon cancer. So that's actually that should go at the bottom. No difference for fiber, surprising, right? We've been advocating that for a long time. And increased risk of red meat, processed meat, liver, and high glycemic load in both men and women. Ovarian cancer, dairy may increase the risk. Conflicting data for that one, the Netherlands study versus the other studies. And then all cancers, the Nebraska study with 1,100 women or so, calcium and vitamin D decreased that. Numbers were small, but it was prospective and randomized and well done. And who knows if sunning would do the same thing. And that's it. Any questions? Lots of questions, right? This is the part of the talk that people have reserved. They say, well, what about tea? Or what about coffee? Or what about... So there's a lot of different things that there's what abouts. And I only touched upon some of the stuff that was out there that's been reviewed the most, but there's there's claims for green tea. There's claims for other things as well. Okay, so anybody get changed their diet?
Coffee?
Yeah. Well, coffee or tea drinkers, right? Which one are you?
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee, right. So those of the Commonwealth countries are more tea drinkers, right? The British colonies. So there's been some stuff with caffeine, specifically green tea with skin cancer. One of the Canadian trials showed that. Coffee, the only outcome that coffee that I know prospectively has improved upon is in the was it the Women's Health study? Six or more cups a day decreased the incidence of suicide. Less suicide with more than six cups. So you are happier, I guess. If you did that. Yes.
I was wondering if you saw any studies regarding organic.
Yeah. So this is because there's a lot of claims about organic, but how to. Right, so, I mean, how to define organic is difficult. And for a short while in college, I was a food science major, so the definition of organic is anything with a carbon atom in it. So anybody can claim to be organic, and so that's one of the problems with that. So, the amount of organic stuff now, I guess, on the market, and that being looked at prospectively, in these other trials, these all originated in the 70s and 80s, so it's not been looked at that I'm aware of now. But part of the problem is how do you define it? How do you define organic? So yeah, no preservatives would be a good way to define it. So you'd have to specify which preservatives that is, I guess, and exclude that.
Yeah.
questions?
Any of the commercial preservatives have found to have increased risk?
Such as?
So the one used in Chinese food.
Oh, the MSG?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not aware of that, and it's interesting because you know, there's a popular book that's out there now called the China Effect, which advocates the Chinese diet, which is a low animal product diet, anything coming from animals, so beans, rice. I'm not sure if MSG was addressed in that book or not, but I've been recommended to read it. It's 600 pages. I don't have time to read it, but it's an interesting observation and comes close to perhaps answering your question. But unaware of any perspectives.
I don't know if you know the answers, but like, has there been any link between household cleaning products? Like, this is a food. But
yeah.
Cancer.
Household cleaning products.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't know the answer. Nothing I'm aware of. Aside from accidental things.
Yeah. What about artificial sweeteners?
Artificial sweeteners.
Yeah.
Right, so, there was something that just came out with the one that's in Sweet Low. Aspartame. Some of the earlier studies did show that, and they have a whole lobbying group for that industry trying to say that these were just animal studies and not human studies, and it hasn't shown anything. But there was a potential association with that in animal models, but
when the dose were very high at that point, nobody would be taking that huge dose. They were doing the calculations regarding the weight.
Right, and that's one of the arguments.
Something per kilogram.
Right.
When you can see the increase in the risk.
That was
10 years ago.
Right, exactly. But some of the products still have it right now. People have then since moved on to Splenda. I mean, in general, just my personal bias, I don't trust any of that stuff. But some of the same arguments, interesting, that you say about, well, it was such a high dose.
Very high.
But it was the same arguments that the cigarette companies were using 30 years or 40 years ago. Well, of course, if you stick 20 cigarettes in a mouse, of course it's going to cause cancer. It's such a high dose. But it'd be interesting to see if any of these studies look at that or any of the... There's ongoing studies all the time to look at this, and there's also, as we did with the BMI, there's studies which are ongoing for clinical trials where we look at secondary outcomes or of diet as well. All right, so hopefully next year I'll have the answer to all of those questions about the coffee, the sweeteners.